He, they say, did this, but to Croesus, as he stood upon the pyre, there came, although he was in such evil case, a memory of the saying of Solon, how he had said with divine inspiration that no one of the living might be called happy. And when this thought came into his mind, they say that he sighed deeply and groaned aloud, having been for long silent, and three times he uttered the name of Solon. Hearing this, Cyrus bade the interpreters ask Croesus who was this person on whom he called, and they came near and asked, and Croesus for a time, it said, kept silence when he was asked this, but afterwards, being pressed, he said, "One whom more than much wealth I should have desired to have speech with all monarchs." Then, since his words were of doubtful import, they asked again of that which he said, and as they were urgent with him and gave him no peace, he told how once Solon, an Athenian, had come and, having inspected all his wealth, had made light of it with such and such words, and how all had turned out for him according as Solon had said, not speaking at all, especially with a view to Croesus himself, but with a view to the whole human race, and especially those who seemed to themselves to be happy men. And while Croesus related these things, already the pyre was lighted, and the edges of it round about were burning. Then they say that Cyrus, hearing from the interpreters what Croesus had said, changed his purpose, and considered that he himself also was but a man, and that he was delivering another man, who had been not inferior to himself in felicity, alive to the fire. And moreover, he feared the requital, and reflected that there was nothing of that which men possessed which was secure. Therefore, they say, he ordered them to extinguish as quickly as possible the fire that was burning, and to bring down Croesus and those who were with him from the pyre. And they, using endeavours, weren't able now to get the mastery of the flames. Then it's related by the Lydians that Croesus, having learned how Cyrus had changed his mind, and seeing that everyone was trying to put out the fire, but that they were no longer able to check it, cried aloud, entreating Apollo, that if any gift had ever been given by him which was acceptable to the god, he would come to his aid and rescue him from the evil which was now upon him. And so with tears entreated the god, and suddenly, they say, after clear sky and calm weather, clouds gathered, and a storm burst, and it rained with a very violent shower, and the pyre was extinguished. Then Cyrus, having perceived that Croesus was a lover of the gods, and a good man, caused him to be brought down from the pyre, and asked him as follows, "Croesus, tell me who of all men was it who persuaded thee to march upon my land, and so to become an enemy to me instead of a friend?" And he said, "O king, I did this to thy felicity and to my own misfortune, and the causer of this was the god of the Hellenes, who incited me to march with my army. For no one is so senseless as to choose of his own will war rather than peace, since in peace the sons bury their fathers, but in war the fathers bury their sons. But it was pleasing, I suppose, to the divine powers that these things should come to pass thus." So Croesus became a counsellor of Cyrus, and lived in Babylon. When Lydia was subdued, Cyrus turned his attention to Nabonidus in Babylon. He defeated the Babylonian army under Belshazzar outside Babylon, and then laid siege to the town. He entered the town in 538 BC, probably, as we've already suggested, with the connivance of the priests of Bel. 7. Cyrus was succeeded by his son Cambyses, who took an army into Egypt in 525 BC. There was a battle in the delta, in which Greek mercenaries fought on both sides. Herodotus declares that he saw the bones of the slain still lying on the field 50 or 60 years later, and comments on the comparative thinness of the Persian skulls. After this battle, Cambyses took Memphis and most of Egypt. In Egypt, we are told, Cambyses went mad. He took great liberties with the Egyptian temples and remained at Memphis, opening ancient tombs and examining the dead bodies. He had already murdered both Croesus, ex-king of Lydia, and his own brother, Smerdis, before coming to Egypt, and he died in Syria on the way back to Susa of an accidental wound, leaving no heirs to succeed him. He was presently succeeded by Darius the Mede, 521 BC, the son of Hystaspes, one of the chief counsellors of Cyrus. The empire of Darius I was larger than any one of the preceding empires whose growth we've traced. It included all Asia Minor and Syria, that's to say the ancient Lydian and Hittite empires, all the old Assyrian and Babylonian empires, Egypt, the Caucasus, and Caspian regions, Media, Persia, and it extended perhaps into India, to the Indus. The nomadic Arabians alone, of all the peoples of what is nowadays called the Near East, didn't pay tribute to the satraps, provincial governors of Darius. The organization of this great empire seems to have been on a much higher level of efficiency than any of its precursors. Great arterial roads joined province to province, and there was a system of royal posts at stated intervals. Post horses stood always ready to carry the government messenger or the traveller, if he had a government permit, on to the next stage of his journey. Apart from this imperial right-of-way and the payment of tribute, the local governments possessed a very considerable amount of local freedom. They were restrained from internecine conflict, which was all to their own good. And, at first, the Greek cities of the mainland of Asia paid the tribute and shared in this Persian peace. Darius was first incited to attack the Greeks in Europe by a homesick Greek physician at his court, who wanted at any cost to be back in Greece. Darius had already made plans for an expedition into Europe, aiming not at Greece, but to the northward of Greece, across the Bosphorus and Danube. He wanted to strike at South Russia, which he believed to be the home country of the Scythian nomads who threatened him on his northern and northeastern frontiers. So he lent an attentive ear to the tempter and sent agents into Greece. This great expedition of Darius opens out our view in this history. It lifts a curtain upon the Balkan country behind Greece, about which we've said nothing hitherto. It carries us to and over the Danube. The nucleus of his army marched from Susa, gathering up contingents as they made their way to the Bosphorus. Here Greek allies, Ionian Greeks from Asia, had made a bridge of boats, and the army crossed over while the Greek allies sailed on in their ships to the Danube, and 2 days' sail up from its mouth landed to make another floating bridge. Meanwhile, Darius and his host advanced along the coast of what is now Bulgaria, but which was then called Thrace. They crossed the Danube and prepared to give battle to the Scythian army and take the cities of the Scythians. But the Scythians had no cities, and they evaded a battle, and the war degenerated into a tedious and hopeless pursuit of the more mobile enemies. Wells were stopped up and pastures destroyed by the nomads. The Scythian horsemen hung upon the skirts of the great army, which consisted mostly of foot soldiers, picking off stragglers and preventing foraging. And they did their best to persuade the Ionian Greeks, who'd made and were guarding the bridge across the Danube, to break up the bridge and so ensure the destruction of Darius. So long as Darius continued to advance, however, the loyalty of his Greek allies remained unshaken. But privation, fatigue and sickness hindered and crippled the Persian army. Darius lost many stragglers and consumed his supplies, and at last the melancholy conviction dawned upon him that a retreat across the Danube was necessary to save him from complete exhaustion and defeat. In order to get a start in his retreat, he sacrificed his sick and wounded. He had these men informed that he was about to attack the Scythians at nightfall, and under this pretense stole out of the camp with the pick of his troops and made off southward, leaving the campfires burning and the usual noises and movements of the camp behind him. Next day the men left in the camp realized the trick their monarch had played upon them and surrendered themselves to the mercy of the Scythians. But Darius had got his start and was able to reach the bridge of boats before his pursuers came upon him.